Bruce Feiler could toss a monkey wrench into the dream of family togetherness at the dinner table. Bruce writes about contemporary family life. He's a New York Times columnist and a best-selling author. He's written The Secrets of Happy Families. And instead of going to the usual psychologists and sociologists, he talks to some of the most creative minds around. People from the military, from business, sports, technology, television, about what techniques they found to be the most successful with their families. Well, the answers aren't what you would expect, including the ones about family dinner. New York Times food columnist and mother, Melissa Clark, got some of the details.
Hi, Bruce. So great to talk to you.
Thank you, Melissa. Thank you for inviting me.
So, first of all, I was so relieved to hear that after all the hoopla, that the family dinner isn't actually as important as we all were led to believe. Tell me about that.
Well, if there's one thing that parents have heard, it's that family dinner is important for kids. And the truth is, there is a lot of research to back that up. But here's the problem. It just simply doesn't work in a lot of our lives. A third of us are not doing it regularly. Americans rank 33 out of 35 countries in terms of eating meals together.
Wow.
But dig deeper into the research, and the news, as you said, is quite relieving for parents. Nothing has been more studied in this space than dinner time. Every like and tens of thousands of meals has been cataloged. And it turns out there's only 10 minutes of conversation in any mealtime. The rest is taken up with take your elbows off the table and
pass
the ketchup, right? And all that kind of stuff. And that's important. But the point is, the research shows you can take that 10, 15 minutes, move it to any time of the day, and still have the same benefit. So if you can have family dinner, fantastic, bravo. But if you can't, if mom works late or a kid has a sports practice, you can meet for family breakfast if that's better in your schedule. You can meet at 8:30 after the kids have done some homework and everybody's home from work. You can have even one meal on the weekends. It can still have positive effect. Because the point is, it's the family time that's important. It's the bonding time, that 15 minutes of conversation. That's what really matters. It's not having that bonding at the dinner table.
So you could even do that, say you're taking your kid to sports practice on the way in the car, for example.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I did was that I tested a bunch of different dinner table conversation games to find out which worked with people of different generations and which were the most effective. I mean, I'll just mention a couple. One is you can play a simple game. We do this now in my family where we play bad and good, where everybody will go around and talk about what happened bad to them. Everyone will talk about what happened good to them, parents and children. And in effect, parents are signaling, you know what? Everything isn't going to go great. This is how I solved a problem today. We play a game now called Pain Points, where actually everybody talks about a difficult situation that they're facing in their life. Maybe a kid has to do a project with someone at school they don't like, or mom says, well, I really want to go to your soccer game on Tuesday, but I need to take grandma to the eye doctor. Suddenly the mom feels less stressed because she's being open about what she's facing, and suddenly the kids are engaging in solving the problem. You end up having an incredibly bonding experience over what was before that just a source of stress.
And it doesn't matter if you're doing that at the dinner table, if you're doing that on the way to the soccer game, or if you're doing that at breakfast, is what you're saying. It's the importance of the conversation itself. You wrote in your book about a chef from New Orleans named John Besh and his wife. They have a really interesting strategy of how they can come together for different types of meals. And I think this is a great inspiration. I was inspired by it.
Well, imagine this dilemma. Here's a guy who's devoted his life to food. He's obviously a celebrity chef now, owns many restaurants in New Orleans and in Texas. He's on TV all the time. Food is central to him, and yet, by definition, in his job, he's working in the evenings. And his wife, even more, just didn't have time. And one day he finds a McDonald's bag crumpled up in the pantry, and he brings it to a wife, like, kind of like a cat would bring a dead mouse to his wife, and he says, excuse me, what is this? And she was like, sorry, hotshot, I married a chef. I thought my problems would be solved. I don't like to cook, and I'm running your four kids around to sports practices. Sorry, I had to stop off. So it prompted this change, and they did a number of things. First of all, they decided to make a strategy where, okay, Dad, you like to cook. Make some extra food on the weekends that I can repurpose during the week because she said, I don't mind repurposing food, but I don't have time or the inclination to make it from scratch. He took over breakfast, and then they made Sunday afternoons. He wasn't working. He made that the time where he would make a big pot of food, make extra for the week, invite the relatives over. Suddenly, they are taking an idea here, Melissa. This is the kind of larger theme that I learned while working on this book, which is there are ideas out there that can help parents. Time shifting is something we know from work. We time shift our TV shows. You can time shift family time. You don't need to have it all in the time that everybody thinks.
That's great. Another thing that you talk about in your book, and you also wrote an article in the Times about this, is the importance of family narratives. And as long as you talk about your family history together, that really is a great way for your family to come together and be cohesive. Can you talk about that?
I've written this column in the New York Times for a number of years now. This was the biggest response I ever had, the most emailed article in the Times for more than a month. And what it is I learned that high-functioning families have three things in common. They adapt all the time, they talk a lot, and they go out and play. But focusing on that second one for a second, they don't just talk about difficult conversations, as important as that is. They talk about what it means to be part of a family. Researchers at Emory gave kids a test about their family history. Do you know where your grandparents were born? Do you know where your parents went to high school? Do you know an aunt or an uncle who had an illness that they overcame? The kids who knew more about their family history had a higher sense of self-confidence and a greater belief that they could control their own lives. It was the single biggest predictor of a child's emotional well-being. And as the researchers explained to me, these kids have a sense that they're part of a larger family narrative. He said there are three types of family narratives. Ascending, we had nothing, we worked hard, we have a lot. Descending, oh, we had a lot, there was a storm or a recession or a war, we lost it all. Or there's an oscillating family narrative. Kids who understand that they come from an oscillating family narrative, we've had some success, but then your uncle lost his job. Oh, your mother was on the board of the hospital, but then you had an aunt who had breast cancer. Kids who understand that they come from that kind of a family know that when they hit their own hardships, which are inevitable, that they can push through, they can do it themselves. So that everybody listening to this conversation has somebody like that in their family. And the inclination is to stuff those skeletons in the closet. And if I've learned one thing, it's to open up those closet doors. You're actually serving your children well.
Bruce, thank you so much for talking with us today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Bruce Feiler is the author of The Secrets of Happy Families. Melissa Clark is the author of Cook This Now. Well, Melissa left us with a recipe for corn salad with tomatoes, avocados, and lime cilantro dressing, just in case you want to do a family dinner. Find it on the website, splendidtable.org.